Live from the WTAD studios in the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, it's time to pull up a chair and assemble today's WTAD News Roundtable.
Thought I couldn't hear, Steve. That wouldn't be anything new.
What?
Exactly.
Welcome to the Thursday edition of the News Roundtable.
Good morning. My name is Quade. Steve Bohl in the studio. Scott Hardy, fresh from the WTAD newsroom. And our plan is to be joined by 47th District Senator Jill Tracy, our senator, on the back half of the show today, who's been appointed to the Senate Task Force on Sexual Discrimination and Harassment Awareness and Prevention. We'll talk to her about that and the bipartisan Women's Caucus in the Senate. Oh, and the property tax bill, SB 851. Is it what it purports itself to be? What's its status? Is something else going to be popping up along those lines? Because property taxes are still a big issue in this state. So we'll... The plan is to talk with Senator Tracy on the back half of today's show, but tons of news from the newsroom this morning, and here with all the latest is Scott Hardy. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. The way you say purports itself, you make it sound like it's up to some hanky-panky when we're not looking.
I think it might be.
Well, as you all know, good news. Members of the union representing 850 Quincy Public School teachers and employees have voted to accept a new four-year contract, or at least the details of that contract, averting a strike that was set to begin on Monday. Members of the Quincy Federation Local 809 voted Tuesday night and Wednesday and overwhelmingly accepted an offer that emerged from a four-and-a-half-hour negotiation session on Monday. The negotiation was able to make progress in three key areas, benefits, insurance, and a few language items, are holding up reaching an agreement. The vote means details of the tentative contract can be finalized and the school year can continue uninterrupted. The details are expected to be finalized by next Tuesday at the latest, when the QPS Board of Education will meet and is expected to ratify the agreement. Details of the contract have not yet been made available. And I was telling Quade off the air, Steve, I knew something was up because yesterday afternoon the school district sent out its agenda for the board meeting for next week.
Yes.
And I looked at it, and on the second page they had a line voting to accept a contract offer with the, QF district, Local 809.
So they were thinking in advance?
Either that or they were confident that the membership would agree to it. The only thing that's kind of stuck in my craw about this whole situation is that both sides, you know what, tell us a little bit more of the truth. Don't sit there and go about, well, we've got some items, and we're looking, and we're thinking, and it's like, did you reach a possible agreement or not? Tell us. Because this affects every single person in this entire, not just the city, but in the entire school district, even those who don't have kids in the school. It affects every single person.
Did the four-year time span surprise you? Because previously, I don't remember that number being used. It was always shorter, and much shorter, like a year, two, maybe.
Well, where it was... in terms of our knowledge of what was going on, the last that we knew, the district had offered a three-year deal, and then the local 809 had countered with a two-year deal. So I guess no, because this is where they made the statement about thinking outside the box. If you'll remember, they made that statement after Monday's negotiation session.
Okay.
So that may have been what they were talking about.
Okay.
And that may be, again, we don't know because we haven't seen details.
The details,
of that.
Yeah.
So we don't know exactly what parts of the box they were thinking outside of, but hopefully when we get more details on exactly what they agreed to, we will definitely let you know.
I'm looking forward to seeing
this. I think we all are.
Yeah.
I think we all are looking forward just to seeing what they did to come up with it. Remember the name Benjamin Train? We just talked about him yesterday. We're talking about him again today. Lee County judge has approved a request by several former students and their parents to seek a default judgment in the civil suit against Train and Midwest Academy. That ruling by District Court Judge John Wright was handed down Wednesday, according to court records. The former students have sued Train and the school in South Lee County Court, alleging they were physically and sexually abused while at the school. An earlier default judgment of $748,000 was made against Train and the school in favor of former employee Cheyenne Jared. In her suit, she said she was fired from the school after reporting an incident of sexual abuse by Train against a former female student, reporting that to the school and authorities. Within a week, she was fired. That's what she was saying and it ultimately proved to be. That report led to the raids by local, state, and federal authorities in early January 16th, which closed the school permanently. Train also faces a December 12th trial in Lee County on sexual abuse, sexual exploitation, and child endangerment charges. The Missouri Supreme Court has scheduled arguments for next February in the appeal by a Texas company over their plans to build a high-voltage power line across Missouri, including Monroe and Rawls counties. I believe it's an exclusive that you're getting from us here. Court records released Tuesday show the Supreme Court scheduled the February hearing for Clean Line Energy Partners. They did that in late October. The company wants to build the Grain Belt Express power line from Kansas across Missouri and Illinois, including building the line through Monroe and Rawls counties, as well as a converter station near Center. Clean Line wants the Supreme Court to overturn the rejection of their application for the project by the Missouri Public Service Commission. You remember they cited a decision by a state appeals court in the Mark Twain transmission line case, which said that Ameren needed permission to use rights-of-way from each county it was building in. For Ameren transmission, it was 5. For Grain Belt, I believe it is like 11 or 12, and they've already had one say, no, you can't. So Missouri is the only state to have rejected the proposed power line, which is more and more of a surprise to me as this goes on. A Barry, Illinois outfitter is facing numerous citations and warnings for illegal deer hunting and related offenses. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources Conservation Police say that they've given more than 50 citations and warnings to Hadley Creek Outfitters in Pike County. They focused on activities on deer hunting properties managed by the company. According to the IDNR, the activities included the unlawful feeding of white-tailed deer and allowing clients to hunt deer over a baited area. Possible demolition of a Keokuk church has been stopped for now. District Court Judge John Wright on Tuesday granted a temporary injunction against the city of Keokuk, stopping it from demolishing the former Unitarian Church. Tri-State's Public Radio reports the owner of the building, Christ Vision, filed the injunction last Tuesday. City said it wasn't aware of the injunction or even that it had been applied for. City has hired a company to demolish the building, but that work hasn't started yet. City leaders had said previously they had the authority to tear down the building after a district judge called it dangerous last December. And that's a look at some of what's going on. We'll keep you updated on more, including possible good news if you live in the John Wood Community College District. We'll have that for you this afternoon and this evening here on WTAD.com and on Twitter at 9:30 a.m. WTAD.
So with that church, is it like, you know, falling in? Is it kind of like, I'm immediately thinking of like Fixer Flatten.
Yeah.
It's not being used.
No, it's not being used. It is in that condition, and it's all fenced off.
Is it like, is there historical significance?
I believe it is an older church, yes. Yes, it is. I believe it was built in the 1880s, I think.
Okay.
So.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Mm-hmm, you bet.
10:15, and we'll take a timeout. And when we come back, our plan is to talk with Senator Jill Tracy next on the News Roundtable.
WTAD.
With this music, I think it's only appropriate to say, my God, it's Jill Tracy.
We heard Moby was one of her favorites.
Wow, that's cool. Welcome back to the News Roundtable on AM 930 WTAD. Very pleased to welcome to the show 47th District State Senator Jill Tracy. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being on the show today.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You have been appointed to the Senate Task Force on Sexual Discrimination and Harassment Awareness and Prevention. Tell me about this task force.
Well, it was newly formed. You know, certainly there's been a lot of focus nationally and then recently in our state about sexual harassment. And so, as often we do, the reaction was from the leaders in the legislature to introduce legislation and get it passed quickly in veto session. And a lot of the women in the two chambers said, you know, let's take a pause here and look at it holistically of how we got to this point and what we can do to really meaningfully find the best solutions and, you know, do a task force to gather information, not just presume we know how to prevent it. And so I think it was a good idea, and I was happy that my Republican leader, Bill Brady, appointed me. And so we have set out a task force. We're inviting members of the public, and we're also inviting different advocacy groups to be members of the commission. So the members aren't formally all set yet, but I presume that we'll start meeting fairly soon, and then we're supposed to deliver a recommendation by December 2018. I think that's a little long. I would like to maybe get some recommendations prior to that and maybe be ready to offer some legislation or solutions by veto session, say, next year.
This task force, what's the relationship with this task force going to be with the newly appointed legislative inspector general?
Well, I think, you know, that's an interesting point because as only we can have happen in Illinois, when you uncover one bad issue, it leads to another. And so what happened was is there was the nationwide attention on sexual harassment, and then a person who felt like they'd been sexually harassed within the Illinois by a Illinois legislator, she came forward recently and said, you know, I asked that a complaint be filed with the Legislative Ethics Commission a year ago, and nothing's happened. And so then it came to light that the position of legislative inspector general that works with the Legislative Ethics Commission had been vacant for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. So that was very disturbing. And so they did take action, and now we do have an interim legislative inspector. And I think that's a very good turn of events because, you know, the Legislative Ethics Commission serves to not only address complaints of sexual harassment, but as also unethical behavior that's alleged. You can do that in the form of a complaint against any legislator. So, you know, it has a multitude of reasons, but, you know, it hears all the complaints against General Assembly members. And it's heard by the Legislative Ethics Commission, and the inspector's position is to investigate and then bring it to the commission. And then, you know, they decide what action is necessary.
Our guest this morning, State Senator Jill Tracy on the News Roundtable. Also, how much overlap with the task force is there with the new bipartisan women's caucus in the Senate? That's also something that's brand new.
It is brand new. I will say the women in both chambers have worked together informally for a couple of years, but they thought it would be good to take a formal action and just form this caucus meetings, but it was a step forward to show unity that we want to ferret out all kinds of sexual harassment. And let me say, it's not just about women's issues. I mean, sexual harassment goes among all genders and or both genders, and so it's something that we need to address. I was in the Illinois Attorney General's office back in 1997, and we first had sexual harassment training. And so here we are years later and still talking about the topic. So certainly there's things that we can learn and things that we should put in place. And just the public awareness and education of people about what would be considered sexual harassment, what's appropriate behavior and not. I like to think that as a mother, I've worked with my daughter and my three sons to make them aware of what's considered that and how to put themselves in positions that make them in a better position not to be the victim of a sexual harassment. Sometimes that can't be the situation, but, you know, also to also, you know, make them aware of what's inappropriate especially in the workplace, comments or actions, and there's so many things we can do. And so I think that's why we wanted to form this commission rather than just introduce legislation. And certainly the Women's Caucus can have an input on that as well. So it's a learning experience.
I'm going to go ahead and ask this question to you, Senator, but it's something that's been kind of burning a hole in Quaid's head now. He's always been wondering, where do you draw the line in the Women's Caucus? Do you side if a certain issue comes along? Is it, do I side on the Women's Caucus or do I side on the party? It's like, do you see any kind of conflict that could arise from something like that?
You know, not really. Women or men, legislators, they have different perspectives of how to achieve a goal and go at it differently. For example, we had just after the announcement of the Women's Caucus, we had a vote on whether work history should be prevented from an employer, that he would never be able to ask about a potential employee's work history. And the sponsor thought that would lead to closing what he perceived as the wage gender gap. And I very strongly opposed that bill because he could offer no empirical, solid evidence that preventing an employer from asking about wage history would close the women's wage gender gap. And I even think if you look at statistics, you can look at the wage gender gap as very differently. You know, it's so that, you know, like I say, we can achieve goals of equality and fairness, but we look at it differently on how to get that solution. So, you know, that's how I perceive that, you know, but as a woman legislator, I look at my perception of, will this solve the problem that we're trying to solve?
Senator Jill Tracy, our guest this morning on the News Roundtable. I want to talk about at least a part of Governor Rauner's turnaround agenda, and that being a property tax freeze. And I want to go to SB 851. What is the status of SB? Is it just languishing now?
It passed in the House, and I don't know if it'll be called in the Senate. I think that certainly property taxes are a real issue with people everywhere. And I think they want to have local I believe my constituents want to have local control over property taxes in the first instance. And so I look at it more as like a property tax relief option with a local control oversight to allow each area. Because what we find downstate is that our property taxes, we rely heavily for funding our education systems, our road systems, our hospital, everything that you see on that property tax bill, that is what we use to fund that. And so you have to look at whether or not those services would be hindered. And so, you know, I don't know if it'll be called in the Senate. And at this point, I don't know that I would support it, because I certainly want to see relief in property taxes wherever possible. But I also know that we have to have local services here.
Do you think there's a possibility that instead of SB 851, which has kind of had a long, strange trip over the last year, do you think there might be a cleaner version of a property tax freeze introduced?
And there again, you know, I don't like the word freeze, because that means that implies permanent. And I don't know if that's realistic. You know, times change and all that. If going back to what we did in the past General Assembly, we did an education bill. And I think it's going to be very good for education. It's a new education formula funding. And within it, it did have components where locally people can choose of whether or not they want to have referendums to do a form of property tax relief if they think that the taxing district is taking too much for education when it should be relying more on state funding and that kind of thing. So I think that perhaps is a more a better approach. But certainly it's a topic that's very popular, and we'll keep looking at it, but you don't want to make it hinder your local government bodies that they can't function and provide the services that they need to. But also we always have to look at the public to think, is my taxing body overtaxing? So, I mean, it's a very complicated structure, but I do think we have to give local control to each taxing body to see, you know, if it's the money that's being taken by taxes is being used appropriately and efficiently.
Balance is a tough thing to achieve in life, much less legislatively.
Absolutely.
Very good.
We'll keep trying.
Senator Jill Tracy, we're out of time, but thank you for joining us on the show today, and we need to make a plan to have you back more often.
Thank you. Love to.
That is the Thursday edition of the News Roundtable. We'll be back here tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. for the Friday show. You should be too.
The News Roundtable will reconvene tomorrow morning at 10:06 a.m. on AM 930 WTAD. Podcast available online at WTAD.com.